eating them.
Welcome, everybody. Sorry we're getting such a late start here. It's a busy time of the year, and Senator Bach, I thought we would start with looking at the comparison that we had requested of the various studies that are in the different tax bills. Would that sound all right to you?
Works for me, Madam Chair.
Okay, so do we want to hear from, do we have anybody here to hear from to tell us about these provisions? Maybe we didn't think that through.
I'm looking for the comparison.
Mr. Michaels,
what kind of sheet are we working on?
Right here.
We have
Does
one.
Everybody have this one?
Oh, I got one.
Is that the comparison of the
studies?
Of the study.
Yeah, I just hand it here. I don't know what I
want. About MJ? Did she do the Senate's name? MJ's here. Want to join us? The Franglements are right here, MJ. There's a couple left. So if you move quick, you'll still get one. If that's okay, I don't know if we have any of these for the public, but we're looking at the various study and reporting provisions in the House and Senate bills. And we had asked staff to prepare this for us. And if it's all right, we thought we'd start with Mr. Michael. And the first one is it's on LGA. Mr. Michael.
Madam Chair, members of the committee, both bills have LGA studies. The House directs the department to assemble a group of the interested city organizations to look at the formula and try to reach consensus on the need for change, and the report's due back by the 1st of February. And basically the ability of the cities to receive the inflation factor in the House bill is contingent upon the legislature adopting the recommendations. I think it might be a little bit misnomer to actually characterize this as a study as much as an effort to get the city groups to try to reach a consensus on the formula.
That's one.
Madam Chair and members, the Senate would appoint a study group which would be appointed by the respective chairs of the Senate and House Taxes Committees, who would each appoint 5 members, and the chairs of the respective property tax divisions would serve as co-chairs. The recommendations would be due by December 15, 2008. And neither of the bills has an appropriation for this work.
Well, if I may interrupt, maybe Senator Scoy and Senator Representative Marquardt, I think, are the authors of these provisions. I know Representative Marquardt authored the House provision. I don't know if Senator Scoy is your author. Mm-hmm. If you want to each tell us your thoughts, I think Representative Marquardt, you were trying to motivate everybody, weren't you? You want to tell us what you've got here?
On that truth and taxation study, Representative Haas wanted to look at.
On this one.
Oh, you got the.
Not a study. This is on the LGA.
Oh,
get
on
the groups together.
Reaching the consensus one. Yeah, and they're working on that. Yeah, it was an idea because I think everyone was trying to look at potentially some formula changes, although Representative Lincheski and I did not want any wholesale changes. But we were looking at bringing groups together, and I know they have been working pretty diligently and have some. They've formulated a few things. They're not quite ready for prime time yet, but maybe towards the end. But that was part of an incentive factor also, is to bring them together, and if they could come up with a conclusion, then the local government aid would go up to the implicit price deflator between 2.5% to 5%. So.
Senator Scoy.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And the Senate, also, as the House did, as we were putting together our property tax bill, we were contacted by all the various interest groups, and they had ideas about changes or additions to the current formula because they felt that their community's needs weren't being addressed adequately or appropriately in the current formula. And so we thought that it would be a good idea to have legislators meet with department and the experts in the area, as well as the cities, and see if we couldn't come up with a real good understanding of what needs differing communities have and what factors would be most important to include in the formula. And if there were changes to the formula, we would address those in the next budget cycle, is kind of the thought that the Senate was having. And as a result of that, we did take our approach to LGA by going back to the 2003 formula. We thought that there hadn't been a lot of dissatisfaction up to that time. There were significant changes made that year, and the Senate didn't have a lot of input into those changes, so we thought it was kind of an appropriate starting point.
For that.
Madam Chair.
Yes. Senator Bach.
Without some legislators serving on this group, how do we get some kind of a buy-in that the recommendations that come out of this will be taken seriously by the respective tax committees?
That's a good point. You get enough different legislators to represent all the different views on LGA. There's so many different kinds of cities, so differently situated. As we all know at this table, they've all joined all kinds of coalitions and lobbying groups that are identified by various names representing certain kinds of cities. It's hard to think how we'd get them all in there. It'd be nice to get legislators who could just think statewide. I think Senator Scoy and Representative Marquardt have done a really good job of that, both of them. But it's hard sometimes to get people to really try to take that statewide approach.
The other thing is, I think, we've got some incredibly talented Senate and House staff that are made available once you have legislators participate. I'm not saying that revenue doesn't, but it is the House and Senate staff that, once we start to actually make some changes, supply us with the information. And I think having them involved in the process of working through different scenarios, I think, helps us next session if we're going to move forward with the changes, that our staff is able to tell us, well, that was something that the working group discussed and we ran several models on that, and then maybe give us some insight as to why the working group decided that maybe didn't work. Where I think if our staff is not involved, we don't benefit from some of the work that group did that ended up, for one reason or another, discarded.
Madam Chair.
I think that's true. Representative Marquardt.
Ms. Dalton just kind of reminded me of kind of the premise behind what we were doing, too, was also the fact that 1994, when the local government aid formula was put together, it actually was the city groups that did that, even after there had been about three studies that had come about before that time that really didn't produce any results. It was when kind of the city groups came together and came up with a formula that they brought forward. But I think if we could combine, I think you need the city groups actually on the ground getting things put together, because they're the ones that are ultimately going to have to come together. And then as it goes before the division or a committee, then you've got staff involved, and staff can also work with the city groups as they're formulating, as is actually the case right now. I mean, I think there's a hybrid we can produce, but I don't know if you need to initially have this group of a lot of legislators meeting. I think you actually have the people who are really going to kind of have to come together meeting initially.
Senator Scoy.
I think the five members wouldn't necessarily have to be all legislators. I don't think that is spelled out. But I think Representative Marquardt does make a good point about the involvement of the affected jurisdictions or stakeholders or cities, because part of this process is going to require their representatives going out to all the individual cities and getting buy-in from all of the mayors and city councils that over the long run, this is a good direction to go. And actually, that's we had a pretty, well, fairly extensive discussion about the effectiveness because we thought that it would be real wise if we allowed time for the community representatives to go out to those communities and get this buy-in that's going to be important as we go forward.
Senator Moore.
Well, Madam Chair, I don't know how unusual or usual it is to have a committee of five members, and all along I've thought that it would be good to have actually five legislative members from each side. And the reason why I think that is because, you know, during the regular legislative session, we spent a great deal of time in committees hearing from different stakeholder groups and specific issues. And we do a lot of very intense work in a very short amount of time. Anyways, and I would think that on something like this, I like the idea that it is 10 legislators from the House and the Senate who are sort of convening this committee and taking in the expert information that has been amassed. And at some point, somebody has to be able to kind of bring that information together and piece together a recommendation that came from the group instead of having this be a recommendation that isn't really housed and in a group. I think to have 10 legislators who have participated in this, who have built the consensus, and I understand that different parts of the state may have different needs, but I think that it is important to incorporate. We already know sort of what the dynamic is. And it isn't being political, but I think it is also being reflective of the reality of the different needs throughout our state and make sure that that's part of the conversation. If we're going to bust open the conversation, then we ought to engage the conversation at a level where we could are able to be thoughtful about what factors get placed on the table. And I think that we are going to need the legislators to be the decision makers. I think at some point we can't rely on different stakeholders to just make that or execute that decision. I mean, the legislators have that responsibility to execute the decision to come together with a recommendation or a framework to take back to the legislature. So I actually am on the opposite end that I would hope that we maintain the Senate language and that we would try to keep it to five legislative members or five from each because I think that I think it would be productive. I think we'll be able to find people who are thoughtful. Because at the end of the day, it isn't just about our parochial areas, but I think if we were to put together a framework, you know, whatever you squeeze have impact in other areas. And we would hope that the example of the working group is sort of a microcosm of what's going to happen once the framework gets brought back to the larger groups, because people will then recognize that we've tried very hard to meet the specific needs of the different areas. And the way we've met that is because the working group was a microcosm of the larger legislative body.
Well, Senator Baca, both sides have a pretty good argument on this one. On to fiscal disparity. What do we think? Senator
Scoyne? Madam Chair, I think that, you know, perhaps Representative Marquardt was right. We could work out as a hybrid here so that, you know, we have a little broader base. I did get the language of the Senate bill, and we have five members of each body, the House and the Senate, appointed by the chair of the Tax Committee. Two of the five must be members of the tax committee. One is a majority party, one is a minority party. The other three, the remaining members, would be representatives of local units of government. And then additionally, the chair of the property tax division would also serve and co-chair the study group.
So, Madam Chair, Senator Skoy, so is it 12 people? Three from the respective tax committees on each side?
Yes.
And then six from the public?
Yes.
I believe that's how our language is.
Yeah.
Works.
I do think we have to do something, work on something here, because, you know, since the big LGA formula change, there's been attempts to change it in bills on both sides already. I mean, there's the taconite offset. There's our township money. You guys are reverting back to an old formula. What else have we done? We did small cities and forgot to readjust the caps, which created a whole bunch of other problems.
Regionals.
Oh, no, that was the regional money that we put in and didn't readjust the caps last year. Is that last year?
2 years ago?
Last year?
2 years ago.
Small city we added. I mean, we're already trying to tweak it, so we clearly need to do something, but...
The fully developed suburbs had a pretty major proposal that they were... Yep. We've been working on this year, dealing with the needs that they felt should be addressed, population and rental housing, pre-60 housing and rental housing. And so there is these issues that we need to work on. And I think we really need a pretty serious effort at it this coming next year and a half or so.
I agree. It's easier to change these things when you have money. When you don't have money, then you're just taking from each other and creating ill will. Yeah, we've been through that. That was not fun. Hopefully, the forecast will continue to look good, so I don't know.
Going back to how you staff the study groups, regardless of how it's made up, and I've through the years done it both ways, but something that I have found helpful at times is that legislative staff does not do the study. Put them in a position then later where they're of, in my view, greater value to the legislative committees because they can do a critique of the study. If they're the ones that have completed the study, you lose that opportunity. And when at times with my involvement with education, when we would ask various education entities to do a study and report back to the legislature, the availability of the staff to read through those and do a critique I found particularly valuable. I chair, you know, the Education Division of Appropriations or the Education Committee, so something to think about.
True. Other thoughts on LGA studies, Horst? LGA.
By the way, Matt, I'm talking about the studies generally.
Generally,
not
yes.
Particular one, but as you move forward in the discussion.
Madam Chair.
Representative Mark.
Well, the suggestion, what Senator Skoy is saying, what if we formed a study group that could have three or four from each House, legislative members? They then would establish a work group, which would be the city stakeholders. The stakeholders would come up with a recommendation and then report back to the study group of legislators. At that point, staff could critique it, and at that point, the study group of the legislators could, you know, make some sort of a final decision, not a final decision, but kind of this is what we like, this is what we don't, and then by that time, it would go off to each house's division or whatever. So you do have a study group. They're not going to do much of the work until it's all done and it's brought back by the stakeholders. And at that time, legislative staff can critique it. And at that time, it can be questioned by members, and then they can do what they want with it. But you have the work pretty much being initially done by the stakeholders. And then it's kind of I think that might be a hybrid that could work. And I think would actually, as Representative Carlson says, give us kind of the checks and balance, too.
I think we should get Representative Marquardt and Senator Skoy to figure this out. Come
back. Form a working group.
Yeah.
Start up another one.
Sure. Okay, fiscal disparities.
Madam Chair, this is a provision that's in the House bill only. It's on page 24 of the comparison summary. The House language essentially directs the Department of Revenue to study the fiscal disparities program and evaluate it against a list of six criteria, which are largely paraphrased from the purpose statement that's in the fiscal disparities law. And so the purpose of this study is to evaluate the extent to which the program is working to meet those goals or not. And there is a $150,000 appropriation to the department for study, and I think it's my understanding that they're thinking about contracting out,
right.
Although they could better speak to that.
Senator Bach, I think the Department of Revenue, well, they, Mr. Manson can jump here, but I think they thought this would be one they would want to band out, just so all the conferees understand, this is my bill, and I want to make it clear that when I was a freshman, Senator Bach, I used to introduce bills to eliminate fiscal disparities. I'm sure you can imagine why. I represent the city that's the largest contributor to the program. And as I've grown older and wiser and taken a big taste of political reality, I know this program's never going to go away. I mean, the way it works is that a majority of people benefit from it and a minority contribute to it, and they should. I mean, as a net tax capacity, they're wealthier. But my interest now in trying to study it is not to get rid of it, but you know, it may be that the way it's working now is that those who are benefiting some from it might benefit more. Maybe the need measure isn't very good, or maybe some are getting more who shouldn't. But just to put it in context for the committee who cares about all these things, and we have reformed LGA for better or for worse, and we have looked at all these. You know, at one time there wasn't county aid. There was a whole bunch of mini aid programs that were all condensed into what we know as county aid now. And they're, you know, HACA. There's all kinds of stuff. And everything that you can think of that's tax-based sharing or property aids has been reformed or studied since its inception. And the only thing that has not changed a bit since it became law is this bill, this provision, fiscal disparities. Senator Bach, did you know that, what year did the Minnesota miracle happen?
1971 session.
Okay. Fiscal disparities, which was also 1971, I think passed before the Minnesota miracle, separate from the Minnesota miracle. It's the oldest property tax program out there and has still not changed since 1971 at all. Now, there was a court challenge in 1975. Did that happen on the range, too? There was a court challenge. And so for a few years it was shut off because, if Mr. Michael, is that right? There was a court challenge, and so fiscal disparities didn't go for a while. And then when the court said, nope, it's a legal program, keep it going, you can keep it going, it was turned back on. And so it has not been reformed since or ever. So I just thought, you know, it contained, and Representative Dietrich can get in on this, it was, I think, a constituent of hers who dreamt this up. Somebody in the Weaver family, I don't know if it was a senator or a House member, maybe somebody here knows, his dad or his uncle, his father, was it a senator or state rep? Representative Weaver. Did you know him? No,
but I knew that was the case.
Anyway, so I think Representative Dietrich knows. You know, I've talked to folks in her county, and I think it's legitimate for people at first to think, if this is a Lynchesky bill, what is she trying to do? I'm not trying to eliminate this program. I'm trying to make sure it's actually doing what it's intended and reform it if it should be reformed, since every other property tax program we have has been. So, you know, I guess I'd ask, Mr. Michael, am I correct? I think this is, and I've said it a couple times, but I just want to be sure, I think this is the only property tax aid and credit program we have that's never been changed. Is that right?
Oh, Madam Chair, there have been some minor changes that were made to the program over the years. I wouldn't characterize any of them as significant in nature the distribution forms significantly changed, nor has the so.
You know, and Senator Bach, just, you know, one other thing. I mean, this is 40% of the growth in CI properties in the metro, and so and the metro is more than half the population, and I think we're the only program like this in the country, world, that has this kind of a situation. So, again, I'm not trying to eliminate it, but I do think it's time to take a look at, you know, one of the when I read the purpose clause, which I've learned over time you shouldn't have purpose clauses, but the purpose clause of the bill says it would do things like make sure we had orderly development. Hard to argue that's happened. Make sure there wouldn't be sprawl. It's kind of hard to argue that's happened. So when you actually look at what the point of the author was in 1971, it's difficult to argue that many of its provisions have actually played out that way. But I think, you know, tax-based sharing, that's fine. It's just, I'd just like to try to study this and see what's right and what's wrong and just come back with recommendations. So I know the Senate has no provision. I just wanted to, you know, understand why I'm interested in this. So, Mr. Michael, truth in taxation.
The next study is the TMT study. It's on page 25 of the comparison. And it requires the Commissioner of Revenue to study basically the costs of local governments in complying with truth in taxation requirements and the level of participation in the hearings. And then it also directs the Commissioner to make recommendations for ways that participation could be increased. And the report is due back to the legislature by January 15 of 2008.
In Representative Markvart, this was, you know about this. This was Representative Hawes.
Yeah, Madam Chair, this was Representative Hawes. He was coming from the angle of that hardly anyone's attending, and yet it's costing quite a bit of money for the local entities. And so I wanted also it to be a study to also see how we could get more people involved, see if we can make what I think is a well-intentioned process in our property tax area, how we could make it better and try to get people more involved. So
that became
a two-pronged effort when it came to the truth in taxation. I know some people would like to totally eliminate it. I do think it has a purpose. I do think that local units of governments can do a better job of getting people to these meetings and advertising them better. I think if it's it was a school with a bond issue, you try to go out and inform the voters, and you go out to various clubs, alliance clubs, and nursing homes and so forth to try to inform the voters. And I think that cities could do that too, counties. So I see if there's any way in which we can improve the process, improve participation.
Headstrom,
the agricultural property valuation. Is on page 39 side by side, and this Senate provision arises from issues of assessment that are of concern to the assessing community and the Department of Revenue and the agricultural community. This would require the Department of Revenue to develop a method of valuing agricultural property that accurately reflects its actual value and report to the legislature by October 15th of 2007. This arose from the work of Senator Scoy's division, and he can elaborate on further work on this area since the Senate acted on this provision.
Senator Scoy.
Oh, thank you, Madam Chair. And we have been working with the department on this, and they are in the process of developing a value for ag land that would reflect more accurately reflect what the value of ag land is for taxation. If the farmer qualifies for green acres, he would then have a different value for taxation purposes other than highest and best use. The department has made significant progress on this study, and I think that we have resolved that we probably don't need this language anymore.
Well, that one was easy. I like that. Mr. Michael, 1099.
These reports appear on page 41 of the side-by-side summary, and this relates to the new withholding requirement that's proposed in both bills for payments to contractors that are essentially performing construction services within a various construction contracting groups. The House requires that each year the department report to the legislature on the amounts of withholding by types of contractors grouped by their NIACS code. So this is not really a study. It's sort of more would be like a table that would show the dollar amounts by NIACS codes.
And the Senate provision requires random sample audits of returns and then a report of the findings from those audits to the legislature by January 15th of 2009.
Senator Bach, you had further thoughts on what we should do here.
I think a report back on this new provision would be important. I've looked at studies from around the country that show that there is quite a bit of underreported income happening by the misclassification of them, what would be employees as independent contractors. I would be interested to know, once revenue has the names and the addresses of all of these people and goes out and does some random audit of them, what they find, if it kind of bears out what studies in other states have shown, that there's a significant amount of underreported income. So, for me at least, I think potentially identifies the scope of the problem, and then down the road, the findings are that there's significant noncompliance here. We go with a more aggressive auditing program in this area of tax compliance.
Mr. Manson?
Madam Chair, this is a good idea, but I don't think the department's ready for it yet. And what we're working on now is the W-2s, getting those in electronically. That was in our bill. And kind of pursuing those efforts of matching the W-2s to what's claimed per the taxpayer. So that's one area we're focusing on. And the other area is the withholding for construction industry. I mean, we still got to kind of work through and develop those two compliance tools before we move into this 1099 reporting. So I think we'd like to wait a little bit on this, and I know we've got a fiscal note to do this part is not a big number, but like $73,000 the first year and $58,000 the second year. And our concern is, given those costs, we prefer to wait and maybe even pursue an alternative where we more withholding like the contractors and to other industries or something. So it sounds like a good tool, and we were interested in it, but we don't know with everything else going on that we're really ready this year. And so I think we'd like to wait a year and pursue this next year. And if there's some reporting involved with that's fine. But we hate to involve all these costs and then not be able to use that information because we're developing these other tools right now.
Mr. Manson, I hear you, but I have to say, I wish I had my stuff with me on this issue. Representative Nelson is our author, and are you the author, Senator Bach? Well, Representative Nelson provided me with quite a bit of background information on this provision, and I did not read it all because, I mean, it was a lot of stuff. But I did pass it on to Mr. Michael, who I'm sure did read it all, but we won't ask him to tell us. But, in noticing the part I did read, there's this huge variation in but people are claiming you could actually get out of this kind of a provision. You have any idea why that is? I mean, it's. Yeah, I can't remember. Was the Wall Street Journal said there was, you know, hundreds of millions of dollars, just money falling from all over the place in this kind of a provision. Why is there such disparity in?
Well, Madam Chair, we get this information now. It's just that it's about 18 months by the time we get it from the IRS. So we get it, so we can deal with it at that point. This would just get it to us sooner. And, I mean, the department's fear is just that we'll get more information, but as we're trying to do these other things, it's just like, you know, too much at once. And so that's kind of, and given the cost, it's not the cheapest thing to do right now. So we'd like to explore these other alternatives and then maybe next year visit whether this is a good approach or a different alternative approach. But so so this isn't really new information. We just get it faster. And
Senator Mr. Manson, if we said we've decided we don't want to do anything on these sheets, only independent contractor, could you do it then?
You mean the contractor withholding?
Yeah. If we decided that, hey, you know what, this is our number one thing, and we don't want to burden the department so much, so we're going to do nothing else on these sheets except independent contractor withholding. We just have time to do it then?
Madam Chair and Senator Bach, the contractor withholding is a good compliance tool.
And Madam Chair, I think we ought to give them enough money. I don't think we want to short them on money. We want them to do a good job on this because the report back will tell us whether this is worth spending additional resources on in the compliance area.
No, I agree. And I've read these, you know, I mean, you would think we could fund the whole state budget according to some of these reports as to how much money is not being collected, and then others where, boy, it's not that much. So I think it is important if we're going to start doing this that we have a good sense what's really out there. So thank you for that. Historic credit. Is that a study? That's not a study.
No.
Mr. Michael?
These are reporting provisions. I think it's probably useful to the historic credit, which is on 38 and 39 of the comparison, and the bioscience grants, which are on page 3. Both of these are provisions that require their new incentives that are provided in the House bill, and both of them require the respective state or quasi-state entities to report annually on the use and impact of the incentives, and that's the Historical Society for the Historic Credit and its deed for the bioscience grant.
Mr. Michael, can I ask, is the bioscience credit, this one, is this the House credit, the House grant? Bioscience grant, which, we have a number of bioscience divisions. Which one is this?
This is the $1 million per year grant to businesses that attract equity investment. It's comparable to the Senate's investment credit for bioscience businesses.
Okay, well, I was just, Senator Bach, I was just looking for Representative Dabney, who left. You know, people just have this timing or they go right when we're getting to their provisions. And I thought he might care about this, but maybe we can come back to it. Mr. Michael?
The next thing probably to talk about is the sales tax study, which appears on page 2 of the report. It's on page 51 of the comparison. The House bill directs the Commissioner of Revenue to study the changes in the existing sales tax that's necessary to move it to what would be considered an ideal or model sales tax, where the tax applies to all final consumer consumption purchases and does not apply to intermediate taxation of business inputs. And it requests the department to list the changes that are needed along with the impact of each of them, and detail administrative and legal problems associated with the changes necessary to implement that sort of model tax. And then they're also to estimate the sort of the revenue neutral rate with this with this change in the base that's both broader and narrower. And then they're also to discuss or analyze the effect on the incidents, who pays the tax by income level, and finally to evaluate the competitiveness effects of the change. Would this succeed in attracting business investment in Minnesota, or would it not have that effect? And again, the report's due by February 1st of next year.
Madam Chair, the Senate would propose a 10-member joint legislative subcommittee with four members of the Senate, including minority party representation, four members of the House, including minority party representation, appointed by the respective tax chairs and the tax chairs themselves. Then the subcommittee's mission is not dissimilar from the House's goals, and this particular list is largely drawn from the Latimer Tax Study Commission work of some time ago, and is essentially a similar policy and economic scan of current issues in the sales and use taxes. And this report would be due by March 30th, 2008.
Senator Bach, what do you think? We need to do something.
I do think we need to do something. It seems like the Senate language is a little more specific on what we would like the subcommittee to review. Specifically, the last bullet that says options for broadening the sales and use tax in conjunction with a lowered rate, exemptions for business inputs, and vertical equity.
It's the same.
Yeah. I agree. I think the makeup is maybe the same. They kind of covered it in the other one. There's good points to both. Senator Bach, though, I mean, in all conferees, I mean, we have to do something about this. You know, I think that people will look back, and if legislators, knowing what they know now about what's happening with the sales tax base, people will look back and wonder why we didn't do anything.
Our
consumption economy, what we're taxing, is shrinking every day. And so as people retire and then we get less income tax receipts and baby boom retires, we're going to be looking more and more to this base, and it's getting smaller because we don't tax the service economy, which is mostly what retired folks use. That's unpopular because we don't want to tax health services and things like that. But, you know, we often hear everybody talk about all the problems with the tax system that we need to deal with. Like, it's fair and it's efficient and it's transparent, but it also has to be adequate. And I think bipartisanly in the House, I think Representative Simpson would agree. You know, we had some really good hearings, and it was very bipartisan that people understand that sales tax base eroding is a long-term problem for Minnesota. And I think politically speaking, you know, we'll never change it if we raise the sales tax. It's not going to probably happen. So we'd have to expand the base and lower the rate. And you know, it's going to take a lot of calculations from the Department of Revenue and a lot of input from the business community. But, you know, of course everybody who's not being taxed now doesn't want to be taxed. You know, it's like you go get a haircut and you're paying tax on the scissors that cut your hair, but you're not paying on the haircut. And as we keep moving to a service economy, and we don't tax fuel and clothing, and it's a problem. We have to do something, and I think we agree. It's good we both have a study. We just got to find something that's going to get a future legislature the right pile of data to have the guts to act on this, because we have a big problem coming if we don't deal with this.
seems to me, Madam Chair, we have been over the years going in the wrong direction by providing all of these sales tax exemptions, and this legislature is partially responsible, at least, for the erosion of the sales tax. You know, just incrementally. You know, a few more things this year and a few more things next year that all have tail revenue implications, and pretty soon it starts to look like real money.
Agreed.
I concur. Are we aware, are there any states recently that have gone through a major sales tax overhaul to provide us a little snapshot of? Mr. Manson, do we know, have any states recently overhauled their sales tax and brought them more up to date?
Madam Chair and Senator Bach, a lot of states have looked at sales tax reform, but I don't think there's any states recently that have moved forward with anything other than just a streamlined sales tax effort.
Y'all waiting around for Congress to act? Is that?
Madam Chair, on that part of it, yeah, the streamlined sales tax, waiting for federal legislation.
You know, Mr. Manson, maybe Ms. Dalton, I mean, okay, so we've been part of Streamline for however long. How long?
I think we passed legislation in 2001.
Okay, and how many states are in?
About 20, 22.
Well, that's good. We're not getting the money we thought we were going to get. That didn't pan out yet. It may.
Correct.
Does it seem like other states are starting to move towards Streamline of late?
Madam Chair, there is more states moving in that direction.
Okay. So realistically, what critical mass of states need to get into SSTA to get Congress to do something here? Would you guess? Ms. Dalton, does anybody want to take a guess? I mean, you know, I think that's what it takes. I think it takes all the states really putting the pressure on. Ms. Dalton, do you know, would you guess at when Congress might actually act? Does it take 30 states, 40, 45? California. Ms. Dalton, is California and New York even, are there even rumblings of ever looking at this?
Madam Chair, I think New York has actually been kind of looking at it.
No.
But they have not applied, nor are they an associate state.
So California, no? Governor Schwarzenegger isn't working on this or anything? We have to get down there. Good news. Well, thank you. I was just checking. I mean, I think it's a long-term problem, and we got to start moving on it. What do we have left? International Economic Development Zone.
Madam Chair, the International Economic Development Zone provision is the reallocation of an existing appropriation or the remainder of an existing appropriation. Which would authorize DEP to use $250,000 of the 2005-06 appropriation to study the economic viability of business plans for that zone.
On the conservation grants, this is again another reporting requirement, just to provide information to the legislature on the grants that were made and the lands where they're located and recipients of the grants.
Henstrom.
And the Senate provision at page 105 of the side-by-side would require the Department of Revenue to update the database that matches homeowners' income and market values. And other property tax data and there is an appropriation cost for that, and I apologize, I didn't bring my fiscal notes to the table with me. The VOS database is one of the tools to use to evaluate, among other things, our property tax refunds.
Mr. Manson? I think this is a great idea.
What?
You know, the VOS database, now I understand there was a taxpayer named Gordy VOS. Never knew him, never met him. So I figure he must have come up with this, or...
He was here about a month ago, Madam Chair, in the tax committee.
We should have taken this up that day.
Former House Tax Chair.
My understanding is this data was pretty good stuff in its day. And why isn't it just updated normally?
Madam Chair.
How would we make this a permanent... I think we should do this, but I think we should do it permanently. Not wait, you know, another bunch of years for it to happen again. Mr. Manson?
Madam Chair.
Dr. Wilson.
Members of the committee, the VOS database was done for quite a while, not every year, but on a fairly continuous basis. I think part of the problem became it takes a lot of time to clean the data. And the data coming in from counties at that time was not coming in a uniform manner. So it was an awful lot of cleanup of data. You try to match data, matching homeowners to income tax records to get the income data. Given the budget cuts of those days, I mean, we did this in 98, 99, I believe. Budget cuts drove some of it because the amount of time spent doing it was considerable. One of the things that has happened since then is starting this year, there will be, we think, much better data coming in from counties in a more uniform, on a more uniform basis. We're not quite sure how that's going to work, but that's a major change that should facilitate the matching considerably. But I think budget cuts were a large part of it. The other comment I would make on the VOS database is just that if you want to know, you asked questions earlier about PTR participation rates. If we had the VOS database, we could tell you, and we could identify fairly well groups of people we think are not participating who are qualified. Without the VOS database, it's very hard to answer those questions.
Well, Senator Bach, I think we should do this because I don't know what money item is, but we have so much assertion going on around here about is our property taxes a measure of the ability to pay, and you know, it just to me, all of it's anecdotal. It's never really based in anything. I think it'd be great if we had good data. So I hope we can find a way to do that one. Thank you. Senator Skoy?
Well, Madam Chair, I think as we move forward on the LGA formula, redo assessing needs, it would be particularly helpful to have this database updated.
It's up to you.
I agree. Mr. Manson.
Madam Chair, can I make just a brief comment before we leave the studies?
Certainly.
I just want to make sure I might have been speaking to the wrong provision when we talked about the withholding. Ah. There's two different provisions. One is just more 1099 reporting. So if you report 1099 for the federal, you'd also give it to the state. That's the one we had hoped to wait off on. The one that actually requires some reporting is the contractor withholding, which we think is a very good tool that we'd like to go forward with. So I did mix the two up, and I just want to clarify that for the members.
Mr. Manson, I appreciate that.
Thank you. We appreciate that. We're going to go to the side-by-side if we can for a minute. I think it sounds like Senator Waugh and Representative Dabney and Representative Dietrich and Hennepin, Ramsey, Dakota, and Anoka folks have worked something out. And it starts on page 74 of the side-by-side. So maybe if there's agreement from everyone, maybe we can adopt these tonight. And to bring everyone back, this was, let's see, pages 74... 5, 6, 7. Is that it? Those four pages, and we got St. Louis County in here. And maybe who wants to start off here? Senator Moore, Representative Dabney, Representative Dietrich, and someone tell us kind of where we're at with all these provisions.
Well, Madam Chair, and members of the committee, what we were trying to do is to try to accomplish and to accommodate, I think, the concerns of both the House and the Senate. And in particular, we also wanted to be responsive to the particular needs of the counties. And to achieve that, what we were able to get with a lot of cooperation from the counties, and we were able to discern out of the conversations that Hennepin County is the county that sort of initiated all of this, and they have some pretty unique needs that led to the creation of the base formula that everyone else looked at and thought that they ought to have or they needed to have the same language. But in conversation and retrospect, I think that a lot of the counties are very respectful of the Senate's concern about that subdivision 5 and the potential for its use, perhaps outside of a redevelopment that's in association with remediation. And all the other counties also agreed that they don't really need the rail authority. So where we've reached the compromise was that we all want to be supportive of Hennepin County's need, and they could make a very good case for why uniquely they created that subdivision 5 to begin with and asked for the rail authority, and there's a whole history behind that. But all the other counties, in looking at the language, agreed that they could do exactly what they needed to do with the environmental remediation dollars without the rail authority and without that subdivision 5. So the agreement here is that there will be, you know, unanimity among all the other counties recognizing that Hennepin County could be unique because they have some unique needs. And I think they can make that case, and I think that they've talked to various members about that.
Representative Abney?
Madam Chair, thank you. Representative all very well. I think that the unique case for Hennepin County is based on its history as having been kind of some of the first industrial center of the state, meaning lots of rail, lots of industrial land uses in the central business area, which requires then lots of remediation when you want anything else to happen with that land as we look to redevelop it. One of the uses for this land, for this fund recently was creating a trail about a half a block from my house across South Minneapolis that's railroad land, still being actively used as railroad, but there's a fence now, and it's a walking, skating, bicycling path across a good chunk of South Minneapolis is heavily used and very much appreciated. And that's just an example of the railroad pollution that we've struggled with in trying to reuse that land and redevelop it.
Dan Dietrich.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I have checked with Anoka County and the author of the bill, and they are satisfied with the Senate language. They just want the authority to be able to clean up the issues in the county.
Thank you for that. And then we've got St. Louis County. So we're all good with that. Are we, Senator Bach, what about the 5 years? Same for everybody, or what are we thinking there?
I think they all should expire at the same time, so they all come back at the same time. I just think having a sunset on these kind of things, at least for the first couple of times, so we make sure that they're doing what the legislature intended them to do and for what the local government said they're going to do is a good thing. And, you know, if it's working, I don't think there was much question about renewing Hennepin's and Ramsey's in the House or the Senate. They clearly are doing what they said they're going to do with it, doing good work. We all know there's plenty of sites to do. But I think coming back 5 years from now, maybe we'll increase the amount. You know, see what they're doing. And I don't think there's any objection to having to come back. I think they're pretty certain that we're going to be happy with the work that they're doing. So.
Madam Chair, in the conversations that we've had, the consensus is that if the Senate would like people to come back in 5 years, they'd be glad to do that because, as Senator Bach has stated, these are very, very worthy projects. And I think the counties are, in fact, my county, Ramsey County, excited for the opportunity to come back and share with the legislature what this type of investment can do for a community. So I think that the counties are not hostile to the idea of the 5-year sunset.
Well, Senator Waugh, is your motion then to help, maybe we need help here, I'm not sure. Is it all the Senate language for all the provisions now? Is that what we've got here? So, mm-hmm. I mean, we'll take a motion here so we can get these done. Not quite?
Not quite.
You want to walk through them? We need to do here. I think it's starting on page 74 of the side by side on Dakota. Is that one? Okay?
Sure, I think the Senate language on Dakota is fine.
So Senator Waugh moves Article 10, Section 6 of the Senate and Section 7. Is that correct? Do we have that one right?
Mm-hmm. Yes.
For Dakota now. Is that one right?
Correct.
Senate language.
Senate language, Section 6 and Section 7. Right? Okay,
yes.
All those in favor of that motion say aye.
Aye.
All those say nay, the motion prevails. Okay, so Senator Waugh on page 75. Can Representative Dietrich move this? I guess not. Well, Senator Waugh is happy to move them on.
I'd be happy to,
yes,
Madam
so
Chair.
So what are we doing there now? Same thing?
Same thing. Senate language.
Sections 8 and 9?
Yes.
Okay, all those in favor say aye.
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 Say nay. The motion prevails. So now we're to page 77.
Madam Chair, the Ramsey County one might need to be tweaked a little bit to be more like the Anoka County. The Ramsey County one initially was drafted to mirror Hennepin County.
Okay, so Senator Moore is going to move Section 2. Directing staff to make that change in the language on the Ramsey County issue that she just raised. Is that okay?
To make it consistent with Anoka and
Dakota. Is that correct?
That's correct, Madam Chair.
Okay, so we'll have staff make that change. Discussion, all those in favor say aye.
Aye.
All say nay. The motion prevails. Senator Moore.
And then I move Section 4 and 5 for St. Louis County of the Senate language, Madam Chair. Oh, Hennepin County first. Section 3 for Hennepin County.
I'll move Section 3. Yeah. That's the Hennepin County as is.
As is, right.
Okay, discussion. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
All say nay. Motion prevails. And Senator Watt.
Move Section 4 and 5 for St. Louis County.
And that's as is. Okay.
All Senate language.
Discussion. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
All say nay. Motion prevails. Okay, so Senator Bach, are we done?
Chair, Senator Watt, Representative Dabney, them Dietrich and the members of the respective counties, thank you for coming to an agreement. I think everybody probably feels pretty good, got what they needed, and we'd rather you made those decisions than us. So thank you for doing that.
Yes, I agree. Thank you. Senator Bach, anything else tonight?
Madam Chair, it's been a long day.
Lots on tomorrow.
I think in the Senate, at least, I don't know about the House, but I think in the Senate tomorrow is going to be a long day on the floor, on the hold. So I'm not sure whether we'll have time to get back here or not. I don't know what the House has planned for tomorrow, but I don't see any reason we wouldn't meet on Thursday, but I think tomorrow is probably unlikely, but stay tuned.
Okay, well, thank you all, and sorry it was a late night, we're adjourned.